Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile.
With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello and welcome to the Raptors Over Everything podcast. I'm your host, William Liu. Once again, I'm joined by ROE favorite, Vivek Jacob. How you doing, man?
I'm doing all right, man. The weather is starting to perk up. My mood's starting to perk up. We got some live soccer with the Bundesliga, thank God. Watching future United star Haaland in action. So, yeah, man, things are starting to, you know, you're starting to see the light at the end of the tunnel.
Yeah, I'm obligated to say Timo Werner better, just for that Liverpool connection there. But yeah, so we're going to talk today about the most improved players on the Raptors, because there's definitely been this big theme of improvement with the team. But just before we get to that, you know, I like to ask everybody, like, how's your life? You know, what's your daily routine like? Are you going outside? You know, you chilling? I mean, don't snitch on yourself, but, you know, also be honest.
I'm definitely going outside for walks when I can. I try to go earlier in the day because I feel like in the evenings it gets a bit more crowded and physically distancing is a bit harder. Other than that, you know, trying to keep myself as busy as possible with work. Complex is definitely helping me out that way. They've been good to me. Other than that, I signed up for Rosetta Stone.
Okay.
trying to learn some French for Pascal and Serge. And just trying to keep myself as busy as possible. And then the usual stuff, right? Like just watching TV shows and movies and stuff like that.
Yeah, next thing you know, this man's going to pop up writing for L'Équipe. that's sick, man. Exclusive. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Pog tells me. That sounds great, man. That's good. Well, what's up with me? I mean, you know, I'm also trying to stay busy. It's weird because I don't feel like the days are less busy now as compared to what they were before. There's like theoretically more time, but it just feels like you're constantly doing things around the house, small like improvement projects. You're like probably watching TV. Obviously, there's not much basketball to watch, but, you know, still trying to come up with content. And then, the thing I picked up most is just, like, these weird late-night bike rides, which I think I might kind of continue when this thing is all over, hopefully soon. But, it's been really refreshing to go out for, like, a bike ride at 11:30, and there's, like, nobody outside. And I think it's just that kind of, like, feeling of, you need a feeling of exercise, because, like, there's so much less exercise happening.
Yeah.
Walking really cool. To do shit, but yeah, I mean, I think it's just the feeling of freedom, which is like, you're just not getting that, otherwise. So it's just any little bit where you can just like bike around for like 1 or 2 hours. It's been really fun. So that's my life right now.
I get what you mean. Cause one of the things I've also been doing is, there's like this massive parking lot right next to me with a massive wall. And so I've been taking a tennis racket and just like hitting against the wall.
Yo, what?
And then, you know, I've got a podcast Holy. On and I just sort of zone out for a bit and, you know, I get my exercise and, it's kind of a nice way to just zone out for a bit.
Wow. That's wild, man. That's some stuff I used to do back home. Like just take a soccer ball out. There's just like not even grass, just probably just like, just like gravel and then a wall and just kick the ball at the wall over and over again.
Yeah.
Like practice your touch, practice shooting. You can draw like a net and stuff like that. Wow. You're really taking it like old school.
Yeah. But I mean, it's funny how like everyone's kind of going back to the things that we used to do way back. Right. And it's just,
yeah, that's true.
The non-technology life where you just found creative ways to spend your time.
Yeah. No, I mean, honestly, as a kid, like, and we'll get to Raptors in a second, but seriously, there's not that much Raptors to talk about, let's be honest. no, like, as a kid, I would just, like, probably my favorite activities were just I would knock on doors in, like, I lived in an apartment complex, and then I would go around the block to all my other friends' apartments and just knock on their doors, because, like, I didn't have a cell phone.
Mm-hmm.
We just, like, literally get together, see who's available, who's not available, and then we go to the park, we bike around, or we played soccer, and, you know, maybe a little bit of basketball, play a little Game Boy, and then go home.
So, yeah.
Yeah, wow. All right, cool. 2020 is the... It's 2005, 2006. All
right. Let's talk about these Raptors.
All right. So, most improved. So, Nick Nurse was speaking recently. I forget where he was speaking, but he kind of said something that I thought was really fitting, where he kind of said, you know, it's almost like a whole bunch of these guys on the team, you know, grew 5 years overnight. And, you know, that was definitely the biggest thing that propelled the Raptors this year, when you think about the fact that they lose the biggest piece, the finals MVP and Kawhi Leonard, and of course another guy in Danny Green, who started the whole season, and his performance tailed in the playoffs, but still, like, he still had some moments there and still a very solid veteran. So when you're losing those two guys, and I was thinking back on the day Kawhi left, I remember the extra kick in the teeth was the Raptors immediately moved to sign Stanley Johnson as a result, and I just couldn't get over the downgrade between Kawhi and Stanley. Like, I even had some hopes for Stanley at the time. I knew he wasn't necessarily that productive when he first came in. Didn't expect him to be this not productive, but yeah, that was a big drop off. But the reason why the Raptors are still basically at the exact same point, at least in the regular season, as they were last year, despite losing Kawhi and despite having all these injuries, is because of development. You got guys, and we've really identified four main guys in Fred VanVleet, Norman Powell, Pascal Siakam, and OG Anunoby, who have taken another step in their game and really improved. And so we can start with Fred. I think Fred, for me, is someone who has shown such a big step in improvement, and I think it was really unexpected, because I guess when you just look at Fred, he doesn't look like he has that much potential. You know, yeah. Like, whenever you see him do something, you're like, okay, this is probably his ceiling. I'm very happy he's doing this, but you're not really sure that he can really continue to improve, just because of some of the physical limitations and the fact that he, you know, came out of the, into the draft and obviously went undrafted, but, you know, he was a 4-year senior as well. So it's just sort of naturally by, you know, whatever your sense of development and potential and growth and things like that, Fred just kind of defies that. And so to see what he did this season, in which he averaged, career highs, obviously, in points. You know, his scoring average went up 6.6 points. His assists went up 1.8 per game. And he also is fourth in the NBA in steals at 1.9 per game, while leading the NBA in deflections per game. Yeah, I mean, how impressed are you with Fred's development? And, you know, what particular stands out to you about Fred's game?
Yeah, I'm really impressed with his development, especially when you looked at that early stage of the season when both Kyle and Serge went down and you were wondering what it would be like to see Pascal and Fred lead the team. And, you know, we were kind of getting a preview of what this could be like for years to come. And I thought he really stepped up to the plate in that period, showed great leadership. And I think the biggest thing for me is the expansion of his range. I think as much as he could have been content with the way the finals ended, I think he recognized that against Orlando and against Philly, his range was an issue. And so these lengthy defenders were able to get out to him and get to his shot. And so I think being able to step out and hit, you know, from 28, almost 30 feet, I think it's forced defenders to get further out to him. And I think that's also helped him blow by defenders from up top and create some more separation. And that's why we've seen an improvement in his pick and roll game as well. I think the chemistry that he's had with Ibaka this season versus last season has improved significantly. And so if there was a bone to pick, I mean, you talked about all the things he's doing defensively as well. If there is a bone to pick, maybe it would be the finishing at the rim. And, you know, that's one area where he still has to improve, where maybe, even though he's gaining that separation, just his size is just an issue in terms of people still being able to get to the rim and block his shot or contest his shot and sort of make him have to throw up some tough shots.
Yeah, and that's the thing where with Fred, it's just there's some things you really can't help, right? So much of Fred's story is him sort of defying the odds and things like that. But, I mean, I don't know, man. You just can't defy being 5'10 sometimes, right? And it's one thing to be kind of 5'10, but, like, young Chris Paul, where before he had that injury and he was dunking on people and he had that lightning quickness. Fred is very quick, but he's not that level of quickness. And it's not like he's like a Steph Curry type shooter where, you know, even though Fred is a really, really good shooter, but people overreact to Steph and it causes panic and he's able to get all the way to the basket when defenses break apart. Like, you know, Fred has done a better job with that, but it's just ultimately when he gets to the rim, especially when there's a contest there, it's always going to be an uphill battle. And I mean that literally. But when you look at Fred's game, though, this year, one thing I think that's been good for him is just that 2-point guard combo with him and Kyle. Because, you know, he's taking more shots in transition. And I think a lot of that just has to do with the fact that, you know, I felt like last season when Fred was the captain of the bench and him and DeLon Wright were the point guards together, like, you know, when Fred was determining the pace of the game, he would almost always slow it down and he would almost make life tougher for himself by playing less in transition. I think now that he's playing with Kyle, when you play in the starting lineup and you play with Kyle, you're going to run. And yeah. I think Fred's got a lot easier chances out of transition. It went from being 20% of his plays last year to 24% this year. And he's very efficient on those. And, you know, it's just as an overall thing, I just think, you know, it's weird because I don't think Fred's skill set has changed that much. I think he's really just polished aspects of his game that he had. Like, he kind of still has the same game as he had in that sophomore year where he broke out as a member of the bench mob. He's just doing everything more and everything better. You know what I mean?
Right. Yeah, and I think it's interesting that you highlighted Chris Paul there for a little bit, because I think if there is an area where he can get to another level, where as much as the rim might sort of be an area where there's going to be a ceiling in terms of how much he can improve, I think if he can really level up that mid-range game, because I was looking at the NBA stat site, and between 5 and 20 feet this season, he's shot 25.6%. Mm-hmm. And so yep. I think if he can just add that as an option, I think it's going to make things so much more difficult for defenses. And I don't know if you saw this video that came out recently of Steve Nash on Phil Handy's sort of educational thing where he's like showing how to run the pick and roll. But basically he was explaining, you know, the difference in terms of understanding angles and just finding a way to get defenders sort of off your hip and the angles that opens up. And I feel like there's times where Fred is able to do that. But then because he isn't as comfortable taking that mid-range shot, the defender is still able to get back in position. And so while maybe that pass to Ibaka is still there, if he can develop that range, that mid-range shot, I think that's the next step for him to find that next level offensively.
Yeah, I agree. Especially because if you expect him to be a lead point guard going forward, and that's another conversation we're going to have with Fred, but especially if he's going to take on that sort of playmaking role, like sometimes defenses are good. Like they know you want to get to the rim. They know you want to collapse a defense, kick out to a shooter. They know you want to pull up for three, and they're going to take away a lot of these things for you. And the options that you're left with is that kind of in-between stuff. And I think that's where maybe it's more of a function of the Raptors offense in general. Like they have, I mean, obviously most NBA teams nowadays are going away from the mid-range and shooting threes and getting to the rim and stuff like that. But the Raptors are especially diligent at playing that Morey ball style in terms of just at least their shot diet.
Right.
And for Fred, it definitely feels like a lot of the times there is a mid-range shot there for him to take. And if he were super aggressive with the look, he would take that. But a lot of his game, especially his assists and stuff like that, a lot of that is just him driving to the basket, drawing a couple of defenders in, and then, you know, hitting the kickout pass and sort of triggering the swing sequences is there. And, you know, that's where, you know, Fred's actually averaging this season 14.9 drives per game, which is a really big number. Like, that's right up there with, like, Damian Lillard and Kyrie Irving. So
right.
He's driving the ball a lot. And again, the issue, as you mentioned earlier, with him not being able to finish at the rim, he only shoots 36%, but he actually passes at 50, like, he passes on 57 point something, point, yeah, just 57% of his drives, which actually leads all starting point guards. So he's really definitely, when he does drive, he's looking to create. And so it is kind of a weird trade-off there where, you know, if he's looking for a shot more, then he's probably not assisting more. Right. And I guess that's a trade-off where the Raptors, you know, as an offense, they probably just said, look, it's probably better if you drive in and kick out.
Yeah. No, I think in terms of regular season style, he's pretty much fine where he is. Like, obviously, he's got to get those percentages up a bit more. Mm-hmm. But in terms of the style of play, he's completely fine. I think it's just in the playoffs where you get into a setting where the best defenses are going to force you into your biggest weaknesses. I think that's where, you know, the mid-range game could hurt him. Like, you think about someone like James Harden and, you know, his regular season success versus his postseason success. I think as a defender, when you know, hey, if I chase this guy off the three-point line, he is only going to take something right at the rim. You know what mm-hmm. I mean? And mm-hmm. so I think that creates an advantage for the defender, whereas, you know, we even saw with Kawhi last season, right? The second he got an open look, mid-range, whatever mm-hmm. it was, boom, it was money in the bank. And so I think that level of threat, just, you know, keeping the defender honest, where, you know, even if he's on your hip, like, how many times have we seen Chris Paul where it's the defender is scared to almost sort of catch up with him because he knows Chris Paul is going to just, you know, be smart enough to stay in front of him and then sort of jerk back and draw the foul, right? And so I think just little things like that or where he can sort of add a bit more tricks to his trade and find that next level.
Yeah, for sure. You know, okay, so I guess this kind of comes down to the question of, you know, how much are you willing to re-sign him for with the Raptors, or how much should the Raptors be willing to re-sign him for? Obviously, lots up in the air with no games going on, and, you know, if games come back, there's probably not going to be fans in there, and so you're losing a lot of revenue. I think Adam Silver said 40% of the NBA's revenue comes from games, so that's going to be a big drop in the cap soon enough.
Yeah.
So we don't really know how that's going to be handled and things like that, but you know, I guess assuming, you know, at least in relative terms to where the old cap environment was, like, what are you looking to re-sign him for? And is he, where does he rank in terms of importance of the Raptors free agents this summer?
I rank him really high in terms of a priority for the offseason, just because I think his chemistry with Siakam is really valuable. Having them as sort of the pillars of the future, I think, is a huge key going down the line. I think the respect that both of those players have around the league is the type of thing that can attract free agents. So I think he would definitely be a major priority. In terms of money, we don't know what the numbers are going to look like, so let's just go off of what they were going to be anyway. So I would say, you know, I think I was always comfortable with something in that sort of 4 years, $80 million range. You know, I ideally a little less, because I think I remember reading Blake Murphy's piece for The Athletic talking about, you know, it might have to be in the 70-ish range just to stay in play for the max with Giannis.
Right.
But other than that, you know, I would hesitate to go into the 100 mil range. But if you had to overpay a little bit, and that is the difference between keeping him and not, I would be okay with, you know, even going up to, you know, sort of that 85-ish range.
Yeah. And, well, I mean, with Fred, it's a couple things. One, he has great leverage right now. You know, the Raptors do have Terrence Davis, and he's very promising, and he's really delivered in his role this year, at least offensively. But, like, you know, Kyle's aging. You know, his contract comes to an end in 2021. You know, you probably want something of a structure in place there. And also, if you just look at the free agency market, it's not that strong. And Fred is going to be on many people's, you know, top free agent choices and stuff like that. So, mm-hmm. You know, that is also kind of tricky. But I agree, man. I think you you know, he's shown so much in terms of what you're looking for. You know, I think for me coming into the season, the biggest question was, is Fred VanVleet a starting guard in the NBA? And I think he proved it this year. Like, yeah, definitely he's a starting guard, man. Like, not only first off, he started all games that he's been healthy this year. He's missed a couple of games, and that's where Norman Powell has come in and stuff like that. But for the most part, Fred has been entrenched as a starter. He was named that from training camp, and he kind of held it and earned it throughout the year. Now, Norm eventually came on really strong and made that a conversation worth having, at least tactically. But, you know, it wasn't anything against Fred. Fred was playing his role really, really well. And, you know, if you look at an even smaller sample in terms of just, you know, what did Fred VanVleet do as the lead point guard while Kyle Lowry was out? Because Lowry hurt himself in that Pelicans game along with Serge early in the season, and he missed 11 games there, and he missed another random game against Brooklyn later on in the season. But in those 12 games where Kyle Lowry was out and Fred VanVleet was the definitive lead guard, Fred averaged, like, let me just pull up the numbers here. He averaged 21.8 points, 7.4 assists, 3.7 rebounds, 2.2 steals per game on 46% shooting from the field, 40% from three, 82% from the free throw line. And additionally, the most important thing is the Raptors went 10-2 in that stretch. And that, you know, included the Lakers win, which was one of their best wins of the season, the Sixers win, which another one of their best wins of the season, where Joel Embiid scored 0 points. And, you know, that 40-point advantage at halftime against the Jazz, that was also with Fred as the leading guy. So, you know, he's proven it to me that he's a, you know, he's a starting caliber guard in this league. And really the only question I have left is, what's the ceiling of a team with Fred VanVleet as a lead guard?
Yeah, I think so much of that depends on who the guard is alongside him and, you know, if Siakam is still around. Because let's face it, that team that we saw without Lowry and Ibaka, that was probably closer to a 500 team. But again, when you factor in those type of players being there, then now again, you're looking at winning close to 65-70% of your games. So I think he's the type of guy that you're not going to look to, you know, be sort of the second best player on a championship team, but he is going to allow sort of everyone else to be their best, which is what you look for in a point guard. And so I think with Siakam, you can see his best years playing alongside of VanVleet. You look at potential free agents, I think they would look at someone like Fred VanVleet and say, yeah, this is someone who's going to help make me better. And I think that's the biggest thing that you would look at with a guard like him. So, yeah, is the ceiling a championship if you get the right pieces? Absolutely, I think so.
Okay, all right. Let's move on to Norman Powell, another guy who has really, really made a big step in his game. The funny thing with Norm is that, you know, he started the year like Norm, what we used to know of Norm. He was averaging about 10 points per game, and there was that game against Charlotte where he was coming off a stretch where he had a 2-point game and then a 26-point game. And Nick Nurse was asked about Norm before the game. And Nick, you know, was like, look, I can't, this inconsistency is killing me, man. Like, I can't have you scoring 26 one night and zero the next. And, you know, whatever. Nick has sort of been very blunt, and that's not the most blunt critique Nick has had of a player this season. But nevertheless, you know, it's really funny because if you look at that, just that random game as an inflection point. Over the rest of the season, Norman Powell averaged 19 points per game on 52% shooting from the field, 41% from three, and 84% from the free throw line. So just an incredibly efficient score this season. What would you say is the biggest factor in his improvement in scoring, where he's basically doubled his scoring output while also being as efficient as ever?
Yeah, I would say Nick Nurse just, you know, those comments just rubbed Powell the wrong way. He took it personal and he turned into MJ.
Yo, the MJ I'm taking it personally meme is pretty funny, man.
Yeah, that has definitely been a highlight with this quarantine. But no, seriously, I think for him, if you looked at his game, the thing you always criticized was his decision making on the drive. And There were times where he looked like he was going too fast for his own good. There were times where he was letting the ball go as he was on the way down. So it just created this sort of awkward finish for him. And now I think he's just figured that out. I think he knows when he wants to, dribble drive and kick out. He knows when he wants to get to the, he knows when he has his man beat and he can get to the rim. Like, he's shooting 68% at the rim this season.
It's unbelievable.
That's basically a big, like,
yeah,
like, you know, finishing like an elite big. And so, I think that's huge. And then, yeah, I think the maturity, the other thing, obviously, we always talk about with Norm is consistency. And Nick Nurse talked about that. And for me to see him go from not being sure what his role was or always being pushed to the side, whether it be by Damari Carroll and then having one injury and having OG Anunoby step into the starting role, I think this season for him to say whether I'm starting, whether I'm coming off the bench, I'm going to have the same impact night in, night out. I think that's been the most impressive aspect for him. And then the last thing I'll touch on is the mid-range. Again, I'm looking at Basketball Reference. Field goal percentage by distance from 10 to 16 feet. Last season, 26.7%. This year, 35.7%. 16 feet to the three-point line. Last season, 23.8%. This year, 47.8%. And again,
yeah,
like, I know the mid-range isn't really a part of the shot spectrum anymore, at least a big part of it. But I think when you just present that mental threat to a defender that you can do those things, that you have that in your game, I think it just makes it so much more difficult for a defender to anticipate your moves. And that's what opens up, I think, everything else. And then obviously he's bombing away from 3-2.
Yeah. Yeah, no, listen, everything with Norm this year is good. Like, it's actually unbelievable. Even sort of beyond the numbers, and we can get back to numbers in a second, but even just beyond the numbers, like, when you watch him viscerally, you're like, wow, this guy is, like, a number two option at times, a number one option at times, which is kind of nuts, because you never thought of Norm Powell that way. Before, it was just, we know Norm can score, but he's inconsistent, and if he gives you something good tonight, then, you know, it's your lucky night, but you can't count on consistently. Like, towards the end of the season, especially because, you know, he had that injury that kind of flared up a couple of times and he sort of knocked out the lineup. Both times when he came back really strong. Like, the first time he came back from injury in January, he went on a stretch where he scored 20-plus points in his first five games back. And then when he came back the second time, towards the end of February, the start of March, before the season was postponed, he came back from injury and then pulled off a stretch where he had five straight games of 20 points or more. And it was really impressive to see what he was doing. Obviously, he's still actually technically the reigning Eastern Conference Player of the Week, because he averaged like 28 points. He averaged 31 points per game for the last week before the season was canceled. Like, what? That's unbelievable with Norm. And then in terms of some of the numbers and stuff like that, as you mentioned, the finishing on the rim is incredible. Like, to put into perspective, Kyrie Irving, who is one of the best finishers at the rim, especially for a guard, is at 65%. Norm is at 68%. And Kawhi freaking Leonard is at 63%. And Norm is shooting better from there. So it's unbelievable. It's pretty much unprecedented for a guard to do what he's doing. And I really think it's just, I think Norm has really found his role. Like, it doesn't seem like Norm's doing anything that is unsustainable. It's not like he's doing something that he's not able to do, but it's just him making smarter decisions. Like, one of the biggest things when you look at his usage that increased was he's using 30% of his possessions in transition this year. And obviously he's great in transition. Whereas last year it was still high, 22%, but that's an 8 percentage point jump for him. And really where that came out of was him running pick and roll, which he can do. It's not his strength to run pick and roll necessarily, but last year he was at 24% of his possessions were pick and roll. This year it's 13%. Mm-hmm. And so a lot of that is just earlier offense. A lot of that is, transition offense instead of half court offense. And he's just so efficient in that setting. He's at 1.25 points per possession in transition. And we've all seen it. Like, he's always had that asset. And, you throw in the fact that, A, he's getting just better shots. He's taking smarter decisions. And then, B, you throw in the fact that he's more poised, as you mentioned, with his finishing. and sometimes even more diverse, including, you know, some flip shots, some maybe a couple of fakes at the rim, able to draw fouls at the rim as well. A lot of and ones for Norm this year.
He's had a couple floaters too.
Yeah. I mean, that game winner against the Bulls, which one of the ugliest games of the year, the season, was that win against the Bulls. But, like, Norm hits the game winner on, like, a little, I don't know, like a push shot, I guess, from, 12 feet. Like, not an easy shot.
No, not at all. So,
yeah.
No, I honestly, like, I know we're going to touch on a few more players here, but he's been my most improved Raptor this season.
Mm. Yeah, I think it's his improvements are so loud, like you just notice them so much, you know what I mean? And it really went from like, oh cool, Norm's having a good night, to like, wow, it's really cool, Norm's having a good night every single night. And that's what it was for like the last 3 months of the season after he overcame his very slow start. So big shout out to Norm. I got two questions with Norm. One, what's his role going forward? Like, is he a starter? Is he a sixth man? Like, what's his ideal role going forward?
Well, ideally, you keep Fred and Kyle together. Mm-hmm. They're the starting backcourt, and Norm is just this awesome sixth man that's able to fill in as a starter whenever is needed. And, you know, that might be an ideal way to sort of manage Lowry's load going forward as well, where you're able to have Norm just spell him for starts, and you know he can take games off and as and when he needs. So yeah, I think ideally that is his role. I think he seems very comfortable with it. I think he's shown, I think, well, this entire roster has shown that they're really able to put their egos aside for team success. And so I think as long as he's getting his 30 minutes a night, I don't think he has an issue with starting or coming off the bench.
Yeah, it feels like it doesn't change his role or the way they play.
Right.
So I agree with you. I think it makes the most sense, too. Because, again, it sucks, too. But as we've seen with the Last Dance, I think people should have known this already. But, you know, it's difficult to manage expectations and things like that. So, you know, in a year where Norm Powell's set, he's on a contract, he's, you know, doesn't have to worry about long-term security, at least especially not immediately or his next contract right now. Whereas Fred's an impending free agent, like, yeah, it makes more sense to start Fred, keep everyone happy, you know, basically do something that's working anyway. So my other question is sort of how can he continue to improve? Because for me, one thing that was actually really interesting about Norm this year was as much as he was really impressive offensively, he was not bad defensively, man. Like he's at 2.4 deflections per game. Which is ahead of a guy like Patrick Beverley, whose entire job is to defend, and even, you know, on par with a guy like OG, who's at 2.5 per game. And, you know, there's been a couple of games that maybe it's a bit of recency bias, but I remember when Steph Curry came back in that Warriors game, the guy designated to guard Steph was Norm Powell. Now, obviously, Fred was out because he was hurt, so, you know, ordinarily you put Fred on Steph, but
yeah,
Norm was on Steph. And I actually was watching back some of the some of Game 6 of the NBA Finals last year. And, you know, in the few possessions where Fred wasn't on the floor when Steph was out there, it was Norm doing it. And so I think he's actually made a couple improvements defensively. I don't think he's necessarily a great defender, but he's able to use his length to be a little bit more disruptive, and it's really activated his transition game. So I feel like that's something that he can improve on. But what do you think he can improve on going forward?
Yeah, I like that you pointed out that he has made strides defensively. I think that's important to note. And I think generally he's also just more comfortable with guys that are either smaller than him or pretty much the same size. I know we got caught up in that one series where he defended Paul George, and I know we got caught up in his wingspan a little bit as well, but I think he's sort of like OG in a sense that when he's able to use his wingspan and his sort of athleticism to his advantage, then it accentuates his best skills, as opposed to, you know, sort of having to do more than you'd expect defending someone bigger than him. I think in terms of areas of improvement, I think they're all kind of focus-based. because there's still those times where he does have a lapse in concentration, where, you know, there's maybe, you know, he does a flyby on a contest and then he doesn't box out. And then the guy shooting the ball ends up getting the board. I mean, Siakam does this a little bit too sometimes.
Right.
But yeah, just little things like that, the weak side help, and just making sure the rotations are crisp. I think those are the only areas where, you know, it's really just a focus thing. It's a concentration thing. It's a read and react thing where, again, you know, if he's feeling so confident on the offensive end now, maybe he is able to sort of expend that energy defensively where, you know, just mentally, you know, it's not like he has to overthink about what he's going to do on the offensive end.
Right. Yeah, for sure. I think there's definitely, I mean, I don't know, man. I wouldn't say any.
Remember, he talked about this a little bit when we had him on that conference call earlier.
Yeah, he did.
And yeah, it was mainly just like focus-based stuff.
Right. And it's sort of making reads both defensively and on offensively. I think defensively, honestly, he's gotten to the point where before I was like, honestly, you know, just it was too inattentive and it wasn't necessarily as serious. I feel like this year his focus has been there definitely a lot more than before. And I would say he's a positive defender this year, which in previous seasons, I would say he was just average. And so I think, you know, improving from that is big for him. And it's definitely just something within his own control. So he can definitely continue to do that. For me, I think it's kind of two things. Like, one, he could really be more of a distributor, because if you're going to be this good at scoring the basketball, then eventually, especially when teams really scout this and teams really sort of put into place, you know, things that they want to safeguard against what Norm does, yeah, his ability to score should also lend himself to be a playmaker. And when you look at the fact that he's averaging only 1.8 assists per game, even though his scoring doubled, that's kind of low. Like, he, you know, he can do a little bit better with that. There's a couple of possessions you know, towards the I guess February and March where Norm would find Serge in the pick and roll, and when Norm was running pick and roll, you know, he had a couple of assists that way. And also, in all fairness to Norm, his role isn't to assist. His role is to finish plays. So I'm not expecting him to have huge assist numbers necessarily. But, you know, I think it wouldn't be unrealistic to see him around 3.5 if he can just make a couple better reads in terms of how he attacks the defense. And then the other thing is just, like, free throws. Like, if he's going to the rim this much and he's so efficient and he's very strong and physical and able to get to the basket, then if he develops one or two tricks and he can get more free throw attempts, I think it would just be an easier way for him to boost his scoring, you know, because all the great, you know, scorers in the NBA, they are averaging like 5 free throw attempts per game. And right. I think that's one thing where, you know, maybe Norm doesn't necessarily have the craft. Like, I'm not talking about like a DeMar DeRozan who has all these pump fakes and he's able to get you up in the air and he's able to draw whatever. But still, I think Norm could probably add a couple more free throws to his game.
Yeah, no, I think that's a perfectly valid point. I think the only thing that maybe takes away from that is, as you said, the craft, right? Like, he's going to the rim trying to finish. He's not necessarily, mm-hmm. like, trying to draw contact.
By the way, I definitely appreciate that. I'm not trying to see more of 2015 DeMar, man.
So, yeah, and I think that's something that can help the team as well, right? Because you don't really have anyone on the team that is going out there and getting you 7-8 free throws every night and, you know, getting, you know, one of the best perimeter defenders on the other team in foul trouble. So,
yep.
If that is something that he could add to his game, it would be a huge benefit. I think he's already, you know, I think obviously Pascal is clearly the number one option, his ability to make reads, and we'll get into that later. But I think Norm, as the number two scoring option, I think has really helped the Raptors maybe find another gear in the middle of the season that they wouldn't have had without him doing what he's doing.
Yeah, absolutely. It's okay. Next guy, Pascal Siakam. It's interesting with Pascal because he's just playing an entirely different game this year than he was last year.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's almost hard to compare some of the numbers. Like, you can say, okay, he's averaging an additional 6.7 points per game. You know, he's, but also his overall shooting field goal percentage is down 9 points, 9%. And he's also averaging more turnovers than he was previously. But it really is just it's so hard to compare the numbers because again it's almost like two entirely different players, right? If you look at just sort of the usage that Pascal has, such a strange usage chart. So he's at 22% of his plays are in transition, which is down actually from last year, where it was 26%. Mm-hmm. He's isolating on 19% of his possessions, which is just rare to see a guy who's in transition that much, but also isolating that much. He's also using the pick and roll at obviously a career high rate. He's at 14.1% of his possessions as a pick and roll ball handler. And it's actually nuts because he, even though he's a like a power forward, at least on paper, he's using the pick and roll as a ball handler like three times more than he is as a big. He only has 3.7% of possessions as a pick and roll big. He's also posting up a lot and he's spotting up a lot. So he's literally doing everything. Whereas if you compare it to last year, mostly a guy who posted up, who hit the spot up corner jumper and went out in transition and occasionally mixed in a couple of isolations and the very, very rare pick and rolls. But now it's just an entirely different game. So from that perspective, for me, I think Pascal is probably the most improved just because this jump is so big. Like, it's one thing to sharpen your tools and get better like Norm or even like Fred. For Pascal, to reinvent yourself, that's probably the hardest thing.
Yeah, no, I definitely hear where you're coming from. I think especially, you know, it really sucks that the season ended when it did because I keep thinking about those games against the Kings, the Warriors, the Jazz, and the way he was closing out those games. When I look at the best players in the game and what they're able to do in playoff situations, their ability to control tempo and recognize, you know, time and score and manage all of that and do exactly what the team needs you to do, that's what he was doing in those games. And you know, I thought that was really a new wrinkle to his game that he had figured out. And you know, hopefully the stoppage doesn't mean he has to like sort of redevelop that understanding again. But I think that was probably something that really excited me more than anything else. Defensively, I think he's such a great team defender. Individually, you know, you can put him pretty much on anyone. His ability to get in the passing lane, I mean, that's elite. We've known that. And, you know, again, I said we can nitpick about the closeouts in the corners. I don't have a problem with him sort of on those closeouts above the break where he just leaks out, because that's a big part of the Raptors transition game. But I think just the ones in the corners where he does the flyby, and again, he's just pretty much just stuck on the bench instead of getting back and boxing out. That's something that I would nitpick. But yeah, I think overall, taking the usage, like you said, the different type of usage, still making sure that transition is part of his game, and just learning in isolation. I think the biggest thing I'll say about Pascal this season is this is like an information gathering season for him. Mm-hmm. And where we'll really see the strides is next season. It's like, okay, now I have this whole season of information, of samples of how, you know, teams attack me in this situation, in that situation, and this is the first time I've been the number one guy all year. Now next year, you know, when I meet up with Rico Hines and we're able to work on our games together, this is exactly how I'm going to pick them apart, and this is what I'm going to do next season. So for me, you know, I think the huge improvements where we'll see in him as a number one option will be next season. I think the skills, you know, we can talk about the above the break 3-point shooting. I think mm-hmm. that's been a big development for him. But beyond that, I think in terms of the intangibles that make a number one option, I think we'll see that next year.
Yeah, I totally agree with you, man. I think especially one of the lessons learned about being a number one guy is just like managing your energy as well.
Yeah.
You know, and this is like not just the course of the season. It's like the off season and how hard you train and stuff. Because Pascal is a guy who famously is in the gym. He's working, as you mentioned, with Rico Hines throughout the whole summer, things like that. It's just tough, man. Like, if you just look at how much of his workload was there. So he goes from, you know, being a guy who comes off the bench to being a guy who's confirmed this, you know, the starting power forward. last season. Of course, by the end of the season, he's the number two option. He's the most improved player. Throughout the playoffs, he's the number two option. He plays deep into the playoffs, obviously wins the title and things like that. So his season is super long. Then he has to train. Then he, you know, went home for the first time since leaving, going back to Cameroon. And he comes back, and all of a sudden, he's the number one option. And, you know, there's just times where you kind of felt like, man, Pascal's running out of gas a little bit. And that's weird to say for a guy who is so famously athletic, and he's so famously he's just such a great motor. But, you know, you can have a great motor, but you're still going to be exhausted. Like, he's not James Milner. Like, it's not possible for him to keep doing this. So I felt like there was a bit of a drop-off for him this season, where he started out the season so hot, was averaging like 27 points per game, especially had to really carry the team when Kyle Lowry went down.
Yeah.
And then there were blips along the way. Like, he wasn't necessarily as consistently dominant as he was at the start of the season. And I think that really just has to go to just managing his energy. Like, I think now that he has a better understanding of sort of what it takes to do what he's doing right now, what's expected of him, I think he can just be a little bit more consistent over the course of the season. And then really it's just like the skill set, right? Like, to me, I think really the next step for him in terms of improvement is just he has to improve as a playmaker, because you can't really be a number one guy and a number one guy who's a really efficient number one guy while only averaging like 3 assists per game. Like, that needs to go up. I kind of want to see that number at around 5, like another, like if you look at other big wings who sort of play as a small forward who can really attack and create, like a LeBron. Obviously LeBron is LeBron, but obviously high numbers for LeBron and assists there. Even if you look at a guy like Giannis, not necessarily a great playmaker, but he's at, you know, between 5 and 6 assists. So I kind of want to see Pascal get to that level as well.
Yeah, no, I hear that. I think maybe the only counter argument to that would be that just the Raptors style of play. And you look at the two guards right now in Fred and Kyle, and how much playmaking they do. Maybe that just takes away from the raw numbers being there.
Okay.
And so I think as long as the right decisions are being made, you know, whether it's him in the post just kicking it back out and getting the swing motion going, I think you're absolutely right in terms of making improvements in those areas. So, you know, in terms of the raw numbers, I don't know that we'll see like a big spike, maybe, you know, seeing, you know, the 3-ish going up to like 7 or 8 or whatever it might be, that, you know, those eye popping assist numbers. Mm-hmm. But, you know, definitely, you know, if he can get to like 5-ish, and the Raptors are still sort of able to stay in this flow that they have, and Fred and Kyle doing a lot of the primary playmaking, I think that decision making area is where I'd be most, you know, focused on.
Right. And then I think the other things are just, you just got to really appreciate how much he changed this game, man. Like,
oh yeah.
If you look at, so I was looking at some numbers for pull-up shooting last year. He made one pull-up three for the entire season, at least regular season. I didn't look at playoffs, just regular season. He made one entire pull-up three. Mm. And this year he's already at 46.
Yeah.
It's, you know, that's definitely a reinvention right there. And if you look at just sort of like the numbers, where you can break it down by like how many handles, how many dribbles he's handling the ball and stuff like that. Last season, 40% of his shots came with 0 dribbles. So that's probably a lot of transition,
yeah.
Probably a lot of pick and roll, probably a lot of catch and shoot and stuff like that. Only 35% when he used 3 or more dribbles. This year, it's 33% of his possessions with 0 dribbles and 48% with 3+ dribbles. So you're looking at a guy who's having to create so much of his own offense. He's facing the basket a lot more than he was last season. He's facing a lot more double teams than he was last season. He's running pick and rolls. He's doing everything. As you mentioned, it's almost like a weird co-op year for him before, like, you know, he's really officially hired into the job.
Yeah.
And even on that level, he's really, really successful. So I'm incredibly optimistic for Pascal. And you just know with a guy like that is he has such a great work ethic that, you know, he's going to sharpen these things. He's going to come back even better. And, you know, we're going to be all great for it. Remember when people were questioning if he was worth a max contract? That was that was dumb.
Yeah.
All right. The last guy we're talking about, OG Anunoby. So it's weird because his numbers aren't necessarily eye-popping like the other guys. But I would just say a super efficient season in terms of in his role, right? As a fifth option, to give 50% shooting from the field for about 11 points per game, shooting 38% from three, career highs across the board. He just really excelled in his role this year, and it really kind of confirmed, you know, what OG can be, because there was a bit of doubt. I mean, as a rookie, you know, definitely a lot of enthusiasm for what OG did. He really fit his role well at the time, but he was still very clearly a limited player, and he's still limited now, but it's definitely such a big improvement from where he was last year, where he was sort of really up and down. You know, obviously circumstances factor into that one, but it's just nice to see OG hold down the starting forward spot all season and be great in this role, defend really well, be efficient with his offense. I'm just overall really happy with OG. So it's not even necessarily an improvement so much as it's just a meeting of expectation, you know?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, you talk about offensively, yeah, he's very limited in the sense that he can't really create his own shot. You know, we've seen maybe a couple of those pick and rolls this season where, you know, Marc Gasol has set a screen for him and he pulls up from the mid-range and you're like, whoa. But outside of that, it's been pretty much everything coming from the three-point line or at the rim. And considering he's the fifth option, that's really all you need. And so for him to do those perform at those aspects of his game so efficiently, I think that's a big plus. Then you look at him as a one-on-one defender with Kawhi and Danny Gunn. He's had to take on the responsibility of defending the opposition's best player. I think he's been excellent. He's definitely, you know, all defensive team. He should be in the conversation for all defensive team. And so there's really nothing you can criticize there. I think he's definitely taken some lessons from Kawhi from last season, the way he's defending now, the way he's picking pockets. You know, I'm sure you remember Kawhi sort of had that swipe move when players would go to their dribble. And I think he's really picked that up.
The crossover when the ball's low.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And so kudos to Kawhi for that. But I think the biggest thing for me is he's playing the position that's most natural to him. Rightfully, I think a lot of people attribute last season's struggles to what happened in his personal life. But I also thought a big factor was the fact that he was playing so much of the four. So I think, you know, you wouldn't think of it naturally, like he's so strong and athletic, you're saying, okay, you know, why can't he play the four? But I think the numbers are just clear evidence that when he's at the three, or even sometimes downsizing to the two, he's able to use his strength and athleticism so much more to really be a burden on whoever he's defending. That I think that's when, again, his strengths get accentuated as a defender. So yeah, I think everything that you wanted out of OG this season, you've pretty much got. I don't know what else you could have wanted, you know, in terms of your expectations of him coming into the season. So I think you hit the nail on the head with the sort of expectations point with him.
Yeah, and the point about power forwards is just perfect, because last year, 76% of his minutes at the power forward spot. This year, 35%. And, you know, that's just, yeah, it's just, it's weird, because as I agree with you, he does have the physicality to play there. You know, even occasionally, Nick Nurse has teased the idea, maybe even occasionally playing OG at center, but it's just, he doesn't play like a big. It just, you know, it's just not his game. He plays like a wing. And, you know, I think, like, the rebounding needs to get better if he's going to be more of a big. Like, if he's going to be, like, a P.J. Tucker-type power forward, which I hope he isn't. But if he's going to be like that, well, P.J. Tucker's a really good rebounder. And OG doesn't strike me in the same way. Doesn't have the same enthusiasm to grab a board as the Sneaker King.
Yeah, and the other thing I just add to the 35% that he's played at power forward this year, I think that would be even lower if not for the injuries that the team has had to deal with.
That's true. Yeah.
If this team was healthy for the majority of the season, and you had Ibaka and Gasol and all the other guys available, I really don't think that number would be even close to 35%. So I think, again, we know how important role and situation is in the NBA, and I really think this year, much more than last year, has suited what he's best suited to do in the NBA.
Right. And I think, look, there's definitely a ceiling for him, but right now he's found a really nice niche for himself. If you look at his usage, you know, 25% of his shots come in transition, 35% come on spot ups, and 11% come off cuts, which is perfect. That's what you want a fifth option to be, essentially. And he's done really well in that role. I guess the question is, like, you know, how does he go from being a fifth option to becoming a fourth option, maybe a third option? And to me, I think it just has to go down to the handles. Like, it's, you know, even a guy like Rondé, he's able to get to places, and then he's able to move in a way where he's able to use his physicality as a real advantage. With OG, the only time you can really see the physicality as an advantage, obviously defensively, but in post-ups. And, you know, that's, yeah, I would say his post-ups, even though they're kind of effective, but, like, they're kind of ugly. And I just think it comes down to the handle. Like, if he can really develop a handle, then he can be more of a driver because he's so big and physical, especially at his position. But until he gets the handle, and right now, it's just not there for him, you know?
Yo, if Rondé is a measure for offensive improvement, he's got a long way to go.
Okay, yeah, fair enough. But you agree, though. Like, Rondé has a better handle than him.
I hear you.
Yeah, and that's an issue.
Rondé can't finish to save his life, but he has a very unique style of getting to his spots.
Mm.
And
yeah.
Yeah.
Also, his spots are unique.
That is true. So, yeah. OG just needs a couple of pet moves that I think that he can go to. And that's the thing, right? Like, being on this Raptors team with so many offensive options, he can work on almost like exclusively one move at a time. You know, it's like, okay, I'm going to nail this down. And then once that's perfected, I can move on to the next one. But in terms of what he needs to be able to go to, it's very rarely that they're going to look to him to create offense. It's very rare that he's not going to be in a position where he's either taking a spot up three or, you know, attacking a closeout. Mm-hmm. So it's just being ready for those other moments where maybe, you know, there's a late kick out and the defender's on you. So you just need, a little something extra. So, again, I think you're right. It comes down to the handle. He does have sort of that, I don't know whether to call it rigidity or just general awkwardness when he's handling the ball.
I think general awkwardness is descriptive of many things about OG. But, yeah, I totally agree. It's not necessarily as fluid as you see with other guys, you know?
Yeah. So I don't know if that's something he'll ever get away from, but yeah, if there's just a couple of pet moves where he can just rely on sort of mentally, it's like, hey, this is plan A, this is plan B. Then, you know, I think that's sort of the next step for him offensively.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. Listen, go get Phil Handy back, man. That's a guy who can get you handles, man.
Yeah.
If OG can get that, and that's the thing with OG too, is it's very intriguing with OG because he's only 22 years old.
Yeah,
like it's there's a lot of time for him to develop and stuff like that. Like, you compare how polished he is as compared to someone like Fred. Well, Fred's like 27. You know, it's a lot of time for OG to sort of make up, and sort of there's a big runway. So I'm very intrigued about him. So, out of these four guys, then, now that we've talked about all four of these guys taking improvements in their games and stuff like that, how would you rank them in terms of, who improved the most to, I mean, at least relatively speaking, who improved the least out of these four guys?
So I said before that I would put Norm number one.
Okay.
So I think I will stick with that. I would say Norm one, I would say the challenge that Pascal has had in terms of taking on the number one role,
mm-hmm.
I would put him at two.
Mm-hmm.
I would put Fred at three. I would say there's very, very little separation between the two. I think the strides that Fred has taken as well are important because he, let's face it, he's had an expanded role too, right? Going from coming off the bench to doing what he's done this season. So it's almost like 2A, 2B with those two, with Pascal and Fred. And then honestly, in terms of improvement, I think Serge is right there.
That's a good call. Serge has been phenomenal this year. it's unbelievable. It's been so satisfying to watch Serge in his role. Why do you have Serge? Like, what have you seen in terms of improvements from Serge?
So I think the two things that stand out from watching him this season will be the 3-point shooting and just his decision making as far as making plays for others are concerned. I think. You know, let's face it, we since he's come over to Toronto and even before that, it always felt like the ball stopped once it was in his hands. I think he was really uncomfortable with playmaking. And a lot of that, it comes down to sort of his basketball upbringing in Oklahoma City. That was just, you know, you watched Kevin Durant and Russell Westbrook, and then if you got the ball, it was to shoot it because there was a double team on one of those guys. And so I think he's had to sort of take his time and figure out this Raptors offense and really get comfortable. And I think now, you know, we see the reads that he's able to make, whether, you know, it's on the catch and then just swinging it to the weak side corner really quickly for a look. Or I mean, one time we even saw him be so unselfish, he passed it to Fred out of bounds. So I think the strides he's made in that area have been incredible. And then, yeah, I think with the 3-point shooting, I think that's something that you can't ignore, because last season he wasn't really a dependable option.
Yeah, it was weird. Last season he only shot 29% from three, which is strange because Serge has been a good 3-point shooter in his career pretty consistently. He's at 36% for his career. He's at 40%, as you mentioned, this year. But yeah, 29% last year. Bit of a blip. But I think, honestly, it was just he had to transition to playing center. So he just wasn't practicing threes. Like,
right.
Maybe something as simple as that, because Serge is such a hard worker. Like, man, when you're at practice, and it's probably going to be a long time until we're back at practice again, at least as media and doing scrums and stuff. Definitely not doing that again. But yeah, when you were at practice and you're waiting and they were like, all right, we're going to get Serge as one of the people you're interviewing, you just know you're going to be there for another 2 extra hours because Serge is going to be working for that whole time.
Yeah.
It's unbelievable. But like, when you see him, you really respect him because he puts in so many reps into what he does and he's gotten so polished at things where he's so dependable in terms of if you hit him on the roll and he's going for a little short hook shot. Great touch on that. You can really practice, really rehearsed. Everything's the same each time, and he's going to make that shot. Or the mid-range pick and pop, which he's so good at.
Yeah.
And I think for a while, he was just working so much on being a center and the skill set of a center. He just wasn't shooting as many threes, and now he's back to shooting a lot of threes. The Raptors actually have a 4-point line on the practice court, too. You notice that, right? Like, they have that tape where it's like maybe a meter back from the actual 3-point line, and Serge is even practicing those, so... Shout out to Serge, man. What an improvement for him.
The one last thing I want to add is sort of the underlying influence that Marc Gasol has also had in his improvement. And, you know, Serge has talked about how he's seen Marc Gasol make plays for others. And it's like, hey, he wants to be able to make those type of plays too. And then going back to last season, you know, one thing that the Bucks tried to expose was they would trap Lowry in the pick and roll. And they would say, hey, Serge can shoot that pick and pop every time because we will play the math and we will let him take the mid-range two every time. And so now when he's by being able to improve his 3-point shot, you know, it kind of counters that overall team defensive strategy for opponents as well. So so I think those are the two biggest areas that he's improved that really make an impact on how the Raptors are able to play.
Shout out to Serge, man. Again, it's also tough because the context here is he's in his 11th season. He's made tons of money out of the NBA. He's a champion, everything like that. To still have motivation, to still work that hard, and to still improve is really impressive, man.
Contract year, baby.
Yeah, seriously. Contract year, Serge, man. Unbelievable. So, I mean, I would probably go for the same you know, I would say Fred is 3 and OG is 4. But I would say instead, I would say Pascal's 1. Just I just think it's such a big change, and it's so difficult to make that change for what he's doing now. And the fact that he's reinvented his game, to do that in your first season as your number one option is wild to me. So he gets number one, and then I guess Norm gets number two. But yeah, so the Raptors, man, I missed them. Just talking to you about the last hour about the Raptors and about actual Raptor stuff, not like, you know, here's a look back at Vince. And, you know, obviously that stuff is real cool, and it's been fun to look at the stuff. But
yeah,
man, this current season.
Oh, man.
Yeah, I'm really excited because the news sounds like they're going to come back soon. And if they can do so safely and they can actually play through these games and, you know, there's a system in place and everything like that, then yeah, I'm excited. I miss the Raptors, man.
Oh, yeah, man. I'm right with you. As long as they can figure out the right way to do it, that, you know, they're not taking away tests from people that need them and all that type of thing, it'll be great to be able to watch some live basketball again.
Yeah. How long do you think it takes until they let media back in?
Media back in? Man, that's going to be a minute, man. I mean, shoot. I want to keep my access, so I'm not going to say too much.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know. Yeah, it might be difficult. We might be doing Zoom calls with live from the locker room and stuff like that, which honestly I kind of prefer because squeezing in there and doing the scrum thing is just, I don't know, man. It feels so outdated. Like, you have the press conference, like, set up and everything like that. You know, all the technology is there. The infrastructure is there. It makes more sense to do that regardless. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. I hear that.
Yeah. All right. I'm going to stop pressing on this. So, V, thanks for coming on the podcast. What do you want to plug? What do you want to link? You know, all that good stuff that you're putting out there right now.
Yeah, you can check out my usual stuff at Complex. I think the last piece that went up was my 5 reasons why Nick Nurse should be NBA's coach of the year. Everyone's pretty much done that piece already, but I thought,
what's the 5th reason? I mean, we know most of the top reasons, but what's the 5th specific reason?
So I basically, my 5th reason was something that shouldn't be a knock against Nurse. So I think some people might look at the Raptors and say, oh, their record against sub 500 teams is amazing, but they haven't done as well against plus 500 teams. Mm-hmm. But overall, when you look at them, they started out 5-12 against plus 500 teams. So to go from that to now be 11-14, you know, I think some of that is having health. Some of that is the guys figuring things out. And I think that's the biggest thing you want to see as a coach is, like, are you able to figure things out? So to go from 5-12 and sort of figure out what needs to be done and Siakam to figure things out, you know, I think that's sort of an underrated aspect of the coaching improvements that he's made over the course of the season.
Mm. Okay. So definitely check that out. One thing I want to say, check out on your behalf, you and Faisal made an elite performance on the Stephen LeBron radio. I have not even seen this movie, but I really enjoyed it. So to tell people about this too.
Wow. So
yo, I really support your guys' work, man. Come on, you know.
Thanks, man. I appreciate it. So the origin story to this is last year during the Raptors run. Alex Wong came into one of those Yahoo post game shows wearing a Kuch Kuch Hota Hai t-shirt. And
what? Why? How did he have that?
He had no idea what he was wearing. And so when I saw it, I was like, why are you a fan of this movie? And he's like, what? So he told me he went to an Indian wedding. And so the couple, I guess they're big Kuch Kuch Hota Hai fans, so they had their faces imposed onto that sort of Kuch Kuch Hota Hai poster and onto shirts, and they gave it to the guests that came in.
Oh, okay.
So that's why he was just rocking that, sort of supporting them. He had no idea that it was a movie and all that.
Mm.
So when I explained all that stuff to him, he was like, okay, I got to watch this movie at some point. And there's no better time to watch 3-4 hour Bollywood films than right now. So, so Alex,
it was very enjoyable. I don't know what to say. Like, it made me really want to watch the movie. I don't have 3 hours to spare right now, but the podcast was great. I mean,
so yeah, and then we did the podcast. Shouts to Faisal. Yeah, it was a lot of fun. Never talked about Bollywood on a podcast before, but it was definitely fun.
Oh man, you came with the facts as you always do, but you really came out with the facts, man. Yeah, I'm looking at it now on Wikipedia. $1.07 billion in box office? Like, what? Yo, did everybody in India see this? Like, what happened?
Pretty much, man. Pretty much.
Okay.
Yeah. Wow. Like, the main duo in that movie, the star couple, like, they're sort of this iconic couple now because of, like, a stretch of movies that they did. And this was, like, definitely one of the big ones. So yeah, man. All right. If you have Prime and you have a few hours, I'd say check it out and then give you a lot more context to the podcast.
Yeah, there you go. So, all right, V. As always, thanks for coming on. And as for the podcast, there's no Classic Reaction podcast this week, but there will be more of that next week, and of course, another episode of the Rapid Everything podcast. So thanks for listening.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Hi, I'm Megan Rinks.
And I'm Melissa D. Montz.
And like every other person with access to a microphone, we started a podcast.
On Mondays, we release Don't Blame Me, which is an advice podcast where listeners call in and we share our thoughts on situations such as what to do if you're going to your boyfriend's family function and you haven't told him that you previously slept with both his twin brothers.
Then on Thursdays, we release our podcast, But Am I Wrong?, where we ethically gossip about pop culture, politics, our lives, and your lives. Listeners write in and we tell them if they're wrong or right in a situation. Are you the hero or the villain?
On Tuesdays and Fridays, we throw in a little something extra as well.
Well, something, something. We strive to create a community grounded in activism, mental health, and inclusivity. Think of us as like your blunt, honest friends who give you advice that you need to hear, not what you want to hear. But we're also always rooting for your success. What we lack in credentials, we make up for in
opinions.
We do that in every episode too.
We're professional unprofessional, so if you're looking for a new slate of podcasts to add to your routine, we're here for you.
Acast recommends.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.